We're glad you're joining us here at Common Thread Online. This is a recording of our community gathering, as we do each week, to think together about the spiritual journey. At the end of the lesson, we open the floor for discussion. We'd love to hear what you're thinking, too. Go to our community's Facebook page, post your thoughts. So, each new year, we revisit Psalm 90's invitation to reflect on our lives. Teach us to number our days that we may gain hearts of wisdom. Tradition attributes that prayer to Moses, which brings to mind a story about the end of Moses' life. You can read about this in Deuteronomy. Well, the people of Israel, they've escaped 400 years of Egyptian slavery. They've had a generation wandering in the desert, reorienting themselves to non-enslavement. And now they're about to enter a new land, brand new lives. And Moses is about to die. And as they prepare to move forward, he says these parting words. There it is, my friends. Look at it. A new land, a new future, a new way that you can be. Life and death are both before you, he says, and they're right over there looking at this new land they're about to inhabit. Life and death are right there before you. Wisdom is over there, but folly is also right there, over there. Love is there, so is hatred. Peace is there, violence too. Vice is there, so is virtue. Life and death are before you. Choose life. Well, teach us to number our days, choose life. Inspiring words, lofty and noble. But you'll notice that they are more aspirational words than they are behavioral words. And it turns out that there is a whole bunch of brass tacks behavioral practicality involved with choosing life. Aspirations and behaviors. Aspiring to a good life and daily actions, daily choices. So a few years ago, Chris and Julie were making a financial plan about college, retirement, that kind of stuff. And they were meeting with an advisor and going over the details, he asked them some questions. And to one of the questions, Julie answered, well, we were hoping that X would go this way or X would go that way. And the advisor stopped them and said, whoa, hold on. Hope is not a strategy. Hope is not a strategy. Which stuck with Julie clearly because she says it all the time at our staff meetings. Hope is not a strategy. And it applies here. Choosing life, hearts of wisdom, not a strategy. Aspirations are really important, but what they are not is a plan. Now, of course, we aspire to virtue. We aspire to love and kindness, to frugality, to diligence, to courage. We aspire to finally get the garage cleaned out. We aspire to these things, and aspirations are important, but they're not a plan because they're not a recurring behavior. When we aspire without a strategy, it just discourages us because it doesn't work. Now, next week, we're going to start a lesson on building a strategy, an effective strategy, how we do change in our lives, what works and what doesn't. Aspirations, but also plans. How does becoming and bettering and changing those aspirational things deep inside of us, how do they really happen? And how do they not happen? What are the pitfalls that we think will work that don't? But today, I want to finish up the background, the context, the introductory part of the lesson that I usually do for each one of our lessons, and I'm going to tell a story. But first, let me underscore a principle that I introduced last week. Before we start working on the how of becoming, the how of bettering and changing, we have to know the what. What is the change that is set before us? That's why I started with that wildly roundabout story last week about agricultural policy in the 1970s. When we fail to dig out the thing under the thing, we're only able to work on the thing. And then we get frustrated because working on the thing doesn't really change anything. And when it doesn't, we get discouraged. It doesn't change anything because that thing is not the real thing. It's not the essential thing. And when we work on that, nothing changes. And then we're discouraged. bettering doesn't happen, changing doesn't happen, our aspirations don't happen, because life is like an iceberg. Most of it is under the radar. Most of it is under our conscious awareness. So we will launch some program of becoming a better person, or some program fixing a problem, or some program of chasing some desire, and we don't even know what's really going on, what the essential thing really is. So the lesson will focus on the how. But that's no help until we start with the discerning process of what. Now, we'll never get it fully discerned. Discerning happens incrementally, but we've got to start with discerning the what is the thing under the thing before we can start pursuing how we get there. Here's an important thing to know about your humanity and mind. We human beings are notoriously bad at knowing what we really want. Now, it's difficult because we are subject in our own culture every day to really smart people trying their best to hijack our wants, trying to hijack our desires. They're trying to get us to want what they want us to want. Sometimes they're trying to get us to want political wants, or buying stuff wants, or attention on the screen wants. And so it's a fire hose. Somebody else's desire being shot at us every day. So much noise, so much emotional hooking us, so much evolutionary brain triggering. So yeah, it's hard to figure out what we truly, deeply want. And consequently, many, probably most of us, we don't tap our deepest desires. We don't tap our deepest purpose. And then add in a dose of religion, or maybe a dose of family, certainly a dose of culture telling us, don't be selfish. Don't focus too much on your own desires, because good people make sacrifices. And the thing is, there is nobility in sacrifice. There are times to set aside our own desires to serve the greater good. We especially see that when we become parents. You know, they're just born and they become black holes of sucking need. And our greatest joy is to meet that need. But when we access our deep desires, when we tap into the interior light, desires like serving the greater good, turns out those actually are deep desires, as is fulfilling our purpose, as is pursuing our deep passions. Because we also carry deep purpose desires, and deep becoming desires, and deep bettering desires, and deep growing and changing desires. Those are also in there very deeply. Now, on the converse, on the flip side of that, there's a whole lot of shiny stuff that fills up our desire bucket every day. A whole bunch of distracting stuff. A whole bunch of you ought to do this, or you ought to think this stuff, or you ought to buy that stuff. And what we find is that most of those are lesser desires. Now, a good way of coming to the conclusion that they are lesser desires is what happens when we actually get them. Because usually, when we get a lesser desire, there's not much lasting satisfaction that goes along with. All it takes is a little bit of time that goes by, and that thing that I really wanted so badly, now it's just a thing. Deeper desires, on the other hand, they do satisfy, and they satisfy in a sustaining way. So here is, as we've seen so many of, here is yet another human condition problem, a baked-in paradox in our being. We are notoriously bad at knowing what we really want. And consequently, many end up on their deathbeds looking back, I should have done more X, and I should have done a lot less Y. It's a real problem. But not for us, right? Because we're going to do this lesson, and we're going to find our way out of this, because we're going to get out of this hardwired design flaw, and we are going to find, thank you ancient wisdom, thank you behavioral psychology, thank you neuroscience, we're going to find our way out of this. Now, you won't be surprised that this is where religion can be particularly helpful, because religion's job is to accumulate experience, to figure out what works and what doesn't work, and then to transmit that knowledge, that understanding, to successive generations. That's why we call it wisdom, because it works. That way, each successive generation doesn't have to reinvent what living the good life, the meaningful life, means. So, that's what religion does when it's working. Well, if you grew up in church, odds are it wasn't working, and you might have heard the term holiness. And if you did hear that term, there's a really good chance that you've got a whole bunch of negative feelings around the word. Because over time, the word holiness has come to mean heavy-handed moralism. It's come to mean soulless rules forcefully enforced. But originally, it was a word about what works. It was a cipher to help us break the code of our heart's true but hidden desires. You've got to watch out, the ancients tell us, because your feelings will betray you. You've got to watch out, they tell you, because your thoughts will betray us. They didn't say this part because they didn't understand evolutionary biology, but in essence they were saying your thoughts and your feelings are a pretty spectacular motivation machinery, but that machinery was designed to survive the Paleolithic era, which worked well there, but now gives you a whole bunch of false positives, a whole bunch of false negatives, so you must be suspicious of your thoughts. You must be suspicious of your feelings. You cannot depend on them. They will betray you. They are not very good indicators of your true, your deep desires. But, they tell us, here's a whole bunch of stuff that we have learned along the way about what human beings really do desire. And for them, they used that word, holiness. What holiness was about was the human heart's deepest desires. Cue the fruit of the Spirit. Love and joy and peace, kindness, goodness, these things are the truest, deepest desires. Cue the virtue curriculum. Courage and diligence and honesty, those things do match a deep desire within us. The divine center, the interior light, holiness, they taught us, is a long apprenticeship designed to help us discern our truest desires. Now, this happens to you. This happens to me. It happened this week, I am sure. Our brains and our bodies get all keyed up, impassioned by a desire. I'm positing impassioned by a lesser desire. I crave that promotion. I despise that person. I am pining over that new house or that organized garage. Something gets in and drills into our brains. I have got to have it. I have got to fix my spouse. I have got to get my kids on track. And when that happens, inflamed, when we are on fire with some desire, the on fire part is a pretty good indicator that even though it's a lesser desire, it has probably bumped up against and is accessing some truer and deeper desire. The problem for us is that we conflate the deep desire with the lesser desire and we can't distinguish the two. What the lesser desire is, the thing. What the deeper desire is, the thing under the thing. And until we untangle that knotted mess, there's no sense trying to figure out the how. How do we chase our desires? How do we get the things that we want? If we're chasing the wrong desire, that doesn't help to figure out how. Now, on a side note, I was really pleased that so many showed up for yesterday's self-awareness workshop. And if you didn't go, that's okay. You can still do a worksheet. We've got people standing by. You can use the Contact Us button. There's also a link there on the website under self-awareness or conflict resolution. The worksheet will really help you tap into your deeper desires. But again, right there, waiting for us to ask, there is ancient wisdom. Having all that experience and ready to share it, here, wisdom says, let us help you figure out what your deeper desires are. Oh, that thing? Yeah, it's a thing, but it's just a thing. Because we do have jobs, and we do have houses, and we do need to work, and we do need to work things out with our spouses and with our kids. Those are desires, and they do matter. It's kind of how we stay alive. But they keep telling us, you're going to do those desires a lot better if you don't just look there, but look here as well. You see those deeper desires? This is really going to help you. So the story. This is Beth and her daughter Molly. And Beth, during our Advent lesson, shared a blog post with me, and I used it in the lesson. And so after I did, I thought it was really good, so I asked if she had any more. And sure enough, she did. And so I'm going to tell her story that she wrote about becoming Molly's mom. My pregnancy was really hard, she wrote. She was on bed rest for 4 months, and I had to stop teaching. So I wasn't doing the thing that I felt like an expert doing, the thing that I was confident doing, the thing, she said, that felt like me. Suddenly, I was Molly's mom, and I was not comfortable with the role, not in the least. Not a kid person, she said. And if you're not a kid person and you have a kid, that means who you aren't is who you have to be every day. I didn't know how to be a mom, she said. I didn't know what that looked like for me. I didn't even know if I could do it. I was uncomfortable with who I was, and I had no roadmap. I wanted someone to tell me step by step how to become Molly's capable, confident, fun-loving, knowledgeable, adventurous, authentic mom. The first 9 months, she said, I felt like I was drowning, life tossing me around like ocean waves. I rotated between feeling like I was on a wild, terrifying adventure, like my head was being dashed against the rocks, like rushing water was eroding and redepositing me, reshaping me daily. No matter which one I was experiencing, one thing was a constant. I was not in control of my own life, and I hated it. So at some point, I decided to take control. Instead of letting life push me around, I was going to push back. And I decided as long as I was in an identity crisis mode, it was a good time to reinvent myself a little bit. Not a total overhaul, just some intentional direction. So I started drafting my own roadmap. And I thought about the kind of person I wanted to be, not what I wanted to do in life, not yet, but about what kinds of qualities I wanted to develop and encourage in myself. I envisioned a woman who took risks, who tried new things, who had adventures, and who had found adventure in everyday life, who was connected to other human beings, who enjoyed life, who challenged herself, who was healthy, who was creative, who was responsible, who was whimsical, who savored life, and who saw things through to completion. And then I asked, what kind of things would this person do? And I made a list of things that person would do. I called it my 40 before 40 list, 40 things I wanted to do before I turned 40 years old. It felt like a fake it till you make it approach to self-improvement, but the surprising thing, it worked. Well, it worked to the extent that I did it, but the real great thing is by doing the list, I also learned to edit the list. Now, she's not saying this, but what I'm hearing when she says learn to edit her list, she's looking for the thing under the thing and the thing under that. She's looking for her deeper desires. Anyway, she continues. By doing the list, I learned which character traits actually weren't that important to me and which ones I wanted to develop even more. You hear that? Deeper desires, it's coming around here. And by editing the character traits, I could decide which list items I would let go of and which ones I should roll over into my 50 before 50 list, because the point of the list is not to check off all the things, but to become the person, and sometimes that takes a while. Most importantly, though, I learned that all those things that I wanted to be, all those things that I was hoping to become, I already was those things. All that goodness, all that divine spirit was already in me. Now, a lot of it had been squashed in various ways by various means, but once I invited the divine to come out and play, it didn't take long to reemerge. It turns out, she wrote, that the divine really likes to add goodness to the world, even if it's just a little bit of whimsy offered by a tired mom to her five-year-old. The thing under the thing. Our deeper desires. Ancient wisdom. When I was a teenager, I went to a retreat in the mountains of California, and I remember it snowed. That was a really big deal for a beach kid. And I remember the focus of the weekend as well, this many years later. Discern our truest and deepest desires, and we discern the will of God. That was the focus. Discern our truest and deepest desires, and we discern the will of God. Now, I am on the other side now of a whole lot of rethinking of my deep framing constructs for what that word God means, what the divine is. But I think that teenage weekend was a seed that grew into my rethinking this whole spirituality thing journey. Because that idea that our truest desires are the will of God, it led to, we are, every one of us, carriers of the indwelling divine. You heard that before? At our core, at the divine center, at the interior light, the Holy Spirit, we are made of the same stuff God is made of. Well, so then of course, if you touch that deep part of yourself, if we touch that deep part of ourselves, we do find our deepest desires. And when we do find our divine purpose. Now again, you still got to have a house. You still got to have a job. You still got to have the desires. The lesser desires aren't bad. They're just lesser. And we do those lesser desires better, more wisely, if we also access the deep part of us, holiness. Hey, and by the way, when we take up the spiritual practices together, when we build authentic spiritual community together, when we meditate together, when we learn together, when we serve together, when we do the practices, what we're doing is we're learning to get past the consuming nature of our lesser desires. We're learning to put second things in second place by tapping into our deeper desires. What we're doing when we do these practices is we're taking the agents up on their offer. Well, thank you. I'll take some of that accumulated experience. I'll take some of that insight into what the deeper desires of the human heart really is. Oh, so maybe you'll want to join a group this year. May we find the deepest desires of our hearts. Inner divine, we do have daily needs, daily desires, practical concerns, things. We've got to survive and thrive. But may we also tap into our deeper, deeper desires, our bettering and our becoming and our changing desires. Amen. Well, if you would, please prepare your tithes and offerings. And as you're doing that, let us remember, as we do, the spiritual community has a strong return on investment. If we give our time and our energy and our love to the community and the dollars that it takes to run the community, there is a rich, enriching return on our investment. So if you get to keep your job, please do keep supporting the community. And as we're finishing up, Gene, what are folks thinking about? What is stirring up in people's hearts?
So Andrew Scioli says, man, we have kind of forgotten the idea that using experience to share wisdom has been the central purpose of religious institutions.
Ah, good. So, by the way, I wrote a book. It's about rethinking sex education, and it's about trying to figure out wisdom, which is basically what works. When we say the word holiness, there's a really good chance you've got in your mind sexual overtones. And all of it is rules and oughts and shoulds and dirty and all that kind of stuff is in there around sexuality. But the whole point of sexual wisdom is just to help us discern what works. And the thing is, it's not about killing joy. It's not killing. It's about deepening it. It's about finding, in addition to the lesser parts of sexuality, finding the deeper parts of sexuality. And that's religion's job. It's to say, hey, we love you. We're not trying to kill things here. We're trying to tell you what works. Here's what works. Yeah, that's a good book. It's called Rethinking Sex Ed.
So Heather Lee Ludden says, what do you want versus what matters to you?
Yeah, well, I think maybe we could draw a Venn diagram of those two things, and we should put them over, lay over each other, and there's a whole lot of those that are two of the same things. And the stuff that's on the that's not shared, maybe not as important. What we want and what matters are kind of in the center. That's pay attention to what Heather just said.
And Cherie says, I'm having to learn how to check in with myself to find my deeper desires. In our culture, and maybe it's being a woman, I have been well trained to look to others for what I should desire or do.
Yeah. There's definitely personality driven challenges for finding our truer desires. You know, the caregiving personalities find it much harder. The connecting with other people's, so if you're familiar with the Enneagram, twos and threes and fours, those personality types, as they find that connection outside, much harder to pay attention to the interior side. But it's hard for all of us because on top of that, we're all enculturated very differently. And then if you take on top of that and think about the gender roles that we have assigned to one another, and specifically the gender roles we've designed for women, it is very much what Cherie says, that it's harder for women in our culture to be able to discern or to give themselves permission to discern the deeper desires of their hearts. Yeah, it's a good point, Cherie. One more?
Sure. Ender says, knock, knock, knock. Can the divine come out to play?
Thank you, Ender. And that's a good way to start. Stop. Pray God we survive this week coming up. It's looking like we will. And remember what I've said so many times. When we are facing seismic change, this is what it looks like. If you go back over history, shocked, yes, many of us were shocked. But if you go back over history, not just what's going on in terms of peddling misinformation, not just what's going on in terms of the dividing of the country, but what's going on historically. If we look back historically, this is what it looks like when we decide we are going to shift from one way of viewing the world to another. If we're going to establish equity that is for all, if we're going to live up to our stated promise of the divine right of every one of us, that all of us share equally in the ownership of our society, this upheaval, this backlash is what it looks like. So in a sense, in a big picture sense, what I saw in front of that church, everything's going to be okay, it is true. That being said, if you would, put your hand on your heart, and let's remember that we have inside of us what this moment in history needs. Love and joy and peace and kindness and virtue and courage and bravery and diligence, all that stuff is in us because the divine indwells us. And if you would, extend your other hand to our city, and let's look for opportunities to share what is in us with the world that we live in, the people that we live with, the people that we go to school with, the people that we work with, people with whom we share our city, looking for opportunities to repair what's broken, to heal what has been wounded. Let's do that together. Amen. Well, God bless you. Again, know what are you thinking afterwards today. We'll see you next week. If these recordings help you move forward on your spiritual journey, we hope you'll take an ownership stake in the community and support the health and well-being of the community. You can go to our website, commonthreadchurch.org. The donate button is at the top of the page for your computer's browser, at the bottom of the page for your phones.